Because the Vedic knowledge is originally, of course, in Sanskritum, and the Indian languages are derived from that. So for discussing intricacies of philosophy, tattva-gyanam, the Indian languages are better for that. But anyway, I'll speak in English as it is the international language these days, and for me, it's still the easiest language. I've been asked to speak on making life joyful and meaningful. And in one sense, I'm sorry that I've been asked to speak on this, because it suggests that people's lives are not joyful and meaningful, and they don't even have any idea how to make their life joyful and meaningful. And that is symptomatic of the material world in all times, places, and circumstances. As we learn from Bhagavad Gita, dukhalayam ashashvatam. This material world is miserable and everything here is temporary. Now you may say, well, we're not supposed to bring religion here. But this is not a religious statement. This is not a, it's not something that's being, that one is asked to accept on blind faith. But it is a fact of the material world that we can all observe, that everything in this world tends towards misery, and everything here is temporary. And this is particularly true in the modern industrialized age. And I know I'm speaking here to many industrialists, but it is particularly true in the modern age that most people spend most of their life doing things that they don't find any joy in. And from the very beginning, modern society, through the mass media and through the educational system, it propagates that the main goal of life is to earn money, and that this is the key to happiness, which is a myth, as is readily observable in the Western world in particular, and particularly as India is no longer considered a developing country. It's to a large extent, well, still, but is developed tremendously in the last generation. But in Western economics, as many of you are probably aware, increasingly it is being suggested that in seeing the development of societies, we should not see simply to the economic development, but we should see to how much people are happy and fulfilled. A few years ago, some sociologists, I believe they were connected with the LSE, London School of Economics, they did a world happiness survey, interviewing people around the world to find out which people were the happiest, which is, it's a difficult thing to quantify. It's easier to find out who's the richest and who's the poorest. Even that may not be, I'm getting a little tangential here, but even that, it may not be easy to understand simply from monetary income. One of my disciples is in Malawi, which is a country in South Central Africa, and Malawi is in the bottom five countries in terms of individual income, the average earnings per capita income. thank you. People earn very little, but he told me that everyone has a little land and they grow their own food, and everyone has better food than most people in the industrialized countries because they grow it themselves without chemicals. So they don't, in terms of, you know, that thing which the world runs on, they don't have much, but they have homes and food and families, which is also, family life is a victim of the modern industrialized world. So, so the World Happiness Survey found that the number one country in the world in terms of per capita happiness was Bangladesh, which is famous for being one of the world's poorest countries, although everyone has a cell phone in Bangladesh nowadays, which they didn't have previously. I would request everyone to kindly turn off their cell phone.
Our mobile to be switched off.
Because you won't get much joy or meaningfulness from a cell phone. In fact, people often ask me, Swamiji, how to get shanti? I tell them the first thing is, throw away your cell phone. I never had one. So, I never had one in my life. I have no intention of having one. So, Bangladesh is a country which is still today largely not industrialized, very traditional. It's also very religious. I spent many years there. And people are not highly educated, but everyone believes in God, a deep natural faith in God. So people, despite many material difficulties, people are happy, you could say. In it's, of course, happiness again is not quantifiable very easily. So, how to find joyfulness and meaningfulness in life? This should be the real goal to which all of human society is directed. But modern society, of course, we're speaking in very general terms here, modern society has made the goal economic development. And it's presumed, with the presumption, that, well, if everyone has enough of the necessities of life, then naturally everyone will be happy. And of course, the necessities of life have increased. It used to be simply roti kapra makan, or maybe in Mysore, idli kapra makan. But now it is cell phone, car, AC, or at least one of these things, punka, fan, and a TV, absolutely required, at least one in every room. No, at least one in every house. And when you get to America, then it becomes one in every room. Dog, hum do hamare do, or kutte bhi hai. Hum do hamare dhai, something like that. So these are all considered necessities. So even societies which have become successful in providing these necessities, because they have emphasized this as being in and of, it's not actually written like that. You won't find it written anywhere that the goal of life is to get money. No one says it directly. But it's just presumed that we should be happy by having more and more material acquisitions. And the modern industrial society runs on the concept that people have to be consumers. Development, prosperity, development, progress, these are the key words. And the idea behind all this is the idea that we have to produce more products, and then people have to work and buy them, And then as people get more and more gadgets and things that they don't need, they'll become more and more happy. But actually it's seen throughout the world that as people do get more and more of these things, that they're not becoming happy. And the Western countries in particular, they exemplify this. It has been propagated, beginning with the British, that the Western culture is the best, it is the one that everyone should try to follow. And my forefathers were ruling over this land of India with the pious intent of civilizing the people, who have now become civilized, as we can see. No longer are they wearing vestis, but they're wearing pants and shirts, so that's a major step towards being civilized, according to the Western way of thinking. But it's propagated that the Western society is, this is the epitome of civilization. But we see that practically, people are not happy. 70% of people in the USA, in the course of their life, seek psychiatric help. And the other 30%, maybe they don't need it, or maybe they're just doing without it. But what we're talking about is a society of mentally disturbed people. There's something, but I mean, that's only one thing. There's something very seriously wrong in a society in which nowadays most of the children are born out of wedlock. That means or their parents divorce. Something seriously wrong. There's something seriously wrong in a country where there's a huge underground economy of illegal drugs. Illegal drugs means people are not content. To take intoxication means that we're not content with our state of consciousness as it is, and we want a quick fix by taking, illegal drugs, is there legal drugs? Alcohol is legalized, but it is, I don't know if there are any alcohol manufacturers here, but it's a fact that consumption of alcohol is highly detrimental to the individual health of those who take it, to the health and well-being of those who take it, and it's a scourge on society. As any wives whose husband is an alcoholic knows, or any husband whose wife is an alcoholic. That hasn't come so much yet in this country, but it's coming. We can be sure. So, joy and meaningfulness. This should be the standard of human society. But increasingly, we see that along with the increasing economic development or industrial development, there appears to be an inverse ratio of joyfulness and sense of meaningfulness. So what went wrong? It's not necessarily that industrialized society has to be so bleak in terms of human culture, which actually it is. This is a major phenomenon that somehow or other all the politicians and planners and professors in the universities overlook. They tend to overlook that a modern society is producing a whole human race of people who are basically discontent. There's something seriously wrong at the very root. Now, of course, the consumer society, yeah, it requires that people buy more and more things. So then, to keep it going. So that automatically brings in cheating. For instance, many years ago, it was quite possible to produce a motor car that will last a person their whole life. Many years ago, light bulbs were invented that you just put it in and then forget it. You never need to change it. But it's not good for business. So, what's that called? Inbuilt? What's that called, Professor? Built-in instability? I forget the term, sorry. No. It's cars, light bulbs, they're all designed to break just after the guarantee period, usually. Everything. So, to keep the business running, everything has to break. Of course, in Agarbatti, there's no such thing. So, that's
a good,
good business. Even outside here, we see what is that, a Dargah or something? The Muslims are offering Agarbatti.
Dargah.
Maybe your business.
Yeah.
Yes. Maybe they're using your incense. So, and it also, because we have, the products have to be sold, and most of the things are not actually necessities. For instance, Pepsi Cola, or Coca-Cola, or Limca, or whatever, they're not necessities. And if they weren't advertised, no one would ever buy them, because there's nothing that great about them. But people do buy them because they're advertised. You have to advertise and present to people that you will be happy, you will be better if you purchase this product. Although no one ever actually experienced happiness by drinking a bottle of Coca-Cola. But it is advertised as such. So the whole society is based on cheating, on promoting that we will be, everyone can become happy if they buy more and more products. And by making the whole purpose, by presenting that this is the purpose of life, everything becomes very cheap and shallow. It's to keep people buying things, you have to keep them pretty stupid, actually. I mean, despite the increase in education, people still buy Pepsi Cola, which means basically they're stupid because they believe the advertisements. And it's required to keep people at a level of consciousness in which they think that happiness comes from purchasing objects which we then enjoy. This also, of course, it's a very complex subject, but it puts me and my enjoyment at the center of life, which is actually opposed to the Rotarian principle of service above self. Instead of thinking about the community and how I, as an individual, am supposed to serve others, it puts the emphasis on how each individual should promote themselves, how I can be a success. We see in modern India that parents who they promote their children, you should be a success, you should be a success, get ahead. And many times it happens that the very parents who have been promoted, who have promoted their children to be a success, because of the whole ethos of individual success that is promoted, when the children become successes at the expense and hard work of their parents, they forget their parents. That's increasing. And much of the welfare work that Rotary is doing, or that different welfare organizations they do it because the people who are supposed to be doing it aren't doing it. Just like old folks' homes or vridashrams. There should be no need for such institutions. The children are supposed to look after their parents, but they don't want to, because they want to enjoy life by themselves. And older people are a nuisance because you have to look after them, and they take up so much time and energy and money. And so the children are off in America, and if they're kind enough, they may incarcerate their elderly parents in an old folks home. But they won't look after them. So these are some of the ills of human society that we see today. Again, going to Bhagavad Gita, and again, it's not religious, but it is an observation that is observable in anyone, whether they be Hindu, Muslim, or atheist, or whatever. As Krishna says, yehi sangsparshaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate adyanta vanta kontaya nateshu ramate buddha. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, this is philosophy, not religion, or these observable facts of the world, that the endeavor for happiness through the senses has got guaranteed built-in distress. The idea that I shall be happy by sensual enjoyment is self-defeating. And therefore, intelligent people don't try for that. But modern society is based on the idea, enjoy yourself. And it's very much promoted in the IT industry, that intelligent young people, they come from small towns and to Bangalore and Mysore, and they're indoctrinated in the culture, that now you've, in the IT culture, now you've come here, you have to drink, you have to smoke, you have to have girlfriends, with the idea that then there'll be a fit candidate for being an IT professional. That you have to adopt this culture, and then you can work. What is the goal of life? Work. That's all. And literally, they'll spend their life literally at the office, just working. They'll sleep there. Food, if you can call it that, is brought to them. What they get, what they eat, is not actually nourishing. It gives some carbohydrates. So they just work. And another very good industry in Bangalore, of course, is the mental health industry, which people, they get there because they're pushed into a culture which they feel is wrong, but they're pushed into that, and then they're pushed into working so hard that they just snap at some point. So I'm touching on the subject of tomorrow night's lecture also. We really need to re-examine the whole direction of society as it's going. The idea that we'll simply promote economic development and businesses, and then we'll have welfare organizations which will solve all the problems, but there's something basically wrong at the very root, which is that the actual meaning and purpose of life is being suppressed. And here's where India in particular has so much to offer. Again, I mean, you invited me to come, and you know I'm a member of ISKCON, and ISKCON is a religious organization, so pardon me if I'm not being wholly secular here. But actually the Vedic knowledge, it's not, at its higher level, it's not religious, as we might say in Outlook, but philosophical. It deals with the real questions of life. Atato Brahma Jignasa. This is the beginning of the Vedic quest for meaning. That now that we have enjoyed life in the Rotary Club for so many years, we're all members of the Rotary Club. There's a big Rotary Club. It's called, I always make this joke when I go to Rotary Clubs, Punarapi Jananam, Punarapi Maranam. We're all in the Rotary Club. So the real goal should be to get out of this Rotary Club. So when we've been in that Rotary Club for enough time that we can realize that there's something wrong with getting born and dying again and again, then we should inquire into the nature of ultimate reality. And it's only when we do that that we can have true and deep meaning, when we understand who we are and what is our function within the universe. We are tiny. If we take ourselves to be this body, then we are tiny little beings in a blip of time in a vast cosmos, the vastness of which we don't know. Yet we feel that we are meaningful. We feel that we are important, because we are. But how and why, that should be understood. We endeavor to be happy. Everyone wants to be happy. Everything that every living being, including even the plants and the ants, everything that every living being does at every moment is to find happiness. But somehow we don't get it. Why? Why is that? That question, the endeavor to find the answer to that question, has been the basis of Indian culture since time immemorial. And providing that answer should be India's greatest gift to the world. So I'm out of time here, unfortunately. I could very briefly say how to find joyfulness and meaningfulness. Chant the names of God and study Bhagavad Gita as it is. How exactly, why, to put all the dots together may take more time, but as I don't have so much time, I'll just, as I have found in my life, and I'm sure you can find in your life, and we can also say, chant the names of God in whichever religious culture you may be in. We're not saying you have to chant Krishna. You can chant any name of God. That will bring us actual joy. So, if there are any questions, you can please put them. I'm open to all kinds. I've spoken in a manner which is challenging much of what many of you may be doing. Not challenging, but putting some pointed questions at it. So I'm open to take pointed questions at me also, if you'd like to place them.
Yes.
I'd like to have a small clarification. Mm-hmm. Is the SPAN institution is able to cope up with every day?
Is the ISKCON institution able to cope up with? I didn't.
Is it able to cope up with the present day setup of the world?
The present day setup of the world.
To elevate the spiritual entity of the world, which is undergoing a sudden and continuous change.
Is the ISKCON institution able to elevate the spiritual consciousness of the world, which is undergoing constant change? Well, actually, our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to bring in a very big change in human society at all levels. Spiritually, by placing God in the center, Krishna in the center, and materially also, following the original Vedic culture, or you could say following the Gandhian idea, that big industrial enterprises are not actually required. We can live simply. And by the grace of God, everything is produced by nature. All the necessities, if we see what are the basic necessities, food, clothing and shelter, these are the basic necessities. And actually India produces these profusely. India is a very rich land in terms of Karnataka, the land, the climate. So everything, the basic physical necessities of life can be easily met by living a simple life. That was Mahatma Gandhi's message also. And then, without being diverted into mass industrial enterprises, which take up to function in such a society, so much of our time goes, because people have to work so hard. Most people have to work 10 hours in India, 10 hours, 12 hours, 14 hours or more a day. So they don't have time for considering the important questions. What is the actual purpose of life? And because the whole consciousness is created of work, earn, buy, enjoy, then again people are diverted from that. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish ideal agrarian communities in which people can again live simply and in God consciousness. They can spend time to discuss Gita, Bhagavatam, all this. Madhav Gopinath Prabhu, who's come from Hyderabad, please stand up. He and his wife are here. They were IT professionals in America, and then he came back to India, but he's with some other devotees. He's left that to live on the land and protect the cows, grow their own food, and impart spiritually based education to their children. So that's a pilot project. I just came from Hebri in Udupi district, just outside Hebri. Some other devotees, members of ISKCON, they've started such a project. So we want to introduce this all over the world as an alternative to industrial society, that people can live simply. In some ways it's more difficult, because if we don't have electricity, if we want to have electricity, then we have to produce more than our basic needs, which means we have to work more, and we get caught in the cycle. And if there's electricity, then you want to have computers and TVs, and there's no end to it. So we just cut that out. And it's difficult in some ways. In the summer, it's very hot in Hyderabad. You have your first summer coming up, or just beginning. But people live like that for generations, and you just get accustomed to it. The good point is, well, you have fresh air to breathe, which you don't get in Mysore. You have fresh food to eat, which you don't get in Mysore. Fresh food means you take it from the ground, cook it, offer it to Krishna, and take it. You won't get that in a city. You have clean food to eat. It's not full of pesticides and hormones and all this. You have drinking water. You don't have to buy it. It doesn't come in a bottle. That was unimaginable previously, wasn't it? You buy water to drink. It was unimaginable. There was a time when buying milk was unimaginable, because everyone had cows, and if someone needed more for a family function, they'd just ask someone and they'd give the extra. But now everything's sold. Now, so they also have the association of like-minded, high-minded people. They also can see the stars in the sky at night, which you don't see in the cities. They also, things they don't have are traffic noise, pollution, and so on. So, despite having successful careers, they've decided that there are more important things in life. So that's a bold move which they've undertaken, and there will be many tests ahead, no doubt. But we ask for the blessings of all of you high-minded people that this project and similar projects may be successful. Yes, please. So this is, yes, this is how ISKCON intend. These are practical. For the basic spiritual elevation is by chanting the names of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Everyone, everywhere can do that. We're not expecting that everyone's going to leave Mysore and all the factories are going to close down. We're not expecting that. Everyone can do that. But for a practical program, that we're not just some theoretical spiritualist, but how people can actually live more meaningful and joyful lives, these rural projects are being started. Yes, please.
Somebody just now explained what are the needs of this modern society.
Yeah.
Industrialization, globalization, all these things is the hour of the day. Living with that God, how to have a very good and peaceful life? These are the inevitable situations.
Living in the inevitability of an industrialized, globalized society, how can we have joy and peacefulness? Well, peacefulness in one sense will be, as long as we're in a city like Mysore, then you're not going to get the same peace as living in the country in terms of traffic sounds, general stress, fear of crime, which was, as far as I understand, in Bangalore and Mysore, there was very little fear of crime previously. Even I've seen in Dwarka or someplace, it used to be that shopkeepers at midday they wouldn't close the shop exactly, they'd just pull the curtain and go inside to take their meal and take rest, and they'd come back 2-3 hours later, and there was no question of anyone stealing, which is unimaginable nowadays. So, and still there are some places in India where people just leave their door open and go outside the house, but such places are decreasing. And in the city, definitely we can't get that kind of peacefulness. But internal peacefulness can certainly be there by chanting the holy names of Krishna and developing or as I said, we're not saying only Krishna, you can chant Allah or Jesus. And by developing the higher consciousness of understanding that I am an eternal jiva, spirit soul, and that my eternal relationship is with Bhagavan, with God, with Krishna. So that can be achieved in any time, place, or circumstance, even in the modern globalized society. So you can do yourself. You can chant Hare Krishna regularly and achieve peacefulness in life. Yes, please.
What is the purpose of life? And when can we mean that we are really experiencing our life satisfactorily, our purpose? When can we mean, yes, or what is sartak?
Sartak, yeah. I was just speaking about that word this morning, sartak. I was discussing this word. our life should be sartak. So, art, the meaning of art, there are different meanings. So one art of art, or artha, I guess you would say in Canada, is money. So generally people think sartak means to get lots of money. But sartak means meaning. That's a more, what is the meaning of meaning? So this is what is the purpose of life? This is the actual question which every person should ask. I was present in 1975 or 1976 when a journalist from the London Broadcasting Corporation asked our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada this very same question. What is the purpose of life? And I expected Srila Prabhupada to reply along these lines, to understand God, to become free from the material world. But Srila Prabhupada answered in a way which surprised me and probably everyone else present. He said that the purpose of life is to enjoy.
Yes.
I was surprised because you know, you expect a Swami to talk about tapasya. But then he went on to explain that as eternal spiritual beings, it is our nature to be happy. We seek happiness because by nature we are happy, satchit ananda. But the very nature of this material world is that however much we try, we do not attain happiness. So the purpose of life should be to find out that means by which we can achieve eternal and unlimited happiness, which is our desire. So that should be the purpose of life. And to put it simply, so in Gita Krishna says, Bahunam jamanam ante jnanavan mam prapadyate. After many births, a jnanavan, a jnani, surrenders to me. So Krishna very kindly helped us by speaking Bhagavad Gita. So to save us many, many lives of trying to find out what that point is, we can say immediately that if we simply know that our eternal relationship is with Krishna, who is the supreme Satchit Anandamai, then we achieve our eternal position of Satchit Ananda. So the purpose of life is to enjoy, to be happy. That is fully and completely possible in Krishna consciousness, which I believe in Canada is called Krishna Pragya. Is it?
We in Roti strongly believe in service above self, at the same time fellowship through service. What is your message for our Rotary families?
Yeah, the Rotary Club can be fulfilled to the best, in the best way, in its noble purposes, by taking some direction from Krishna, who's given the best direction for everyone, in all times and all places and all circumstances, for Rotary Club members and for everyone. It is proper that people who are blessed by God to be leaders of society, it is proper that they think of the welfare of others, as you are doing. We should see what is the best and eternal welfare, and on that basis, act for the benefit of human society. So welfare is at different levels, physical level, mental level, social level, and ultimately spiritual level. So individually, I would request you to study. You're all presumably familiar with Bhagavad Gita, but I would request you to study this Bhagavad Gita Yatharup, as it's been translated by our spiritual master, And at this stage, instead of saying, you should do this, you should do that, I would request you, as you're all highly educated and intelligent people, to study the books of Srila Prabhupada, which are meant exactly for this purpose, to give the knowledge by which all of human society can be benefited. And then based on that, you can see how the Rotary Club can function in the best possible way. Hare Krishna, Mr. Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
My general knowledge, 6:30, Mahi is going to talk.